Chapter 29. 29 June 1937. The front door of the Bellevue stood open. As Joey pushed at the lobby door, the familiar notice, reminding him not to tread sand through the hall, caught his eye. He was past caring about wiping his feet. The last 2 days had left him reeling. To think of Lizzie losing the baby brought a lump to his throat. He'd managed to get her to hospital in time, but the miscarriage had left her tearful and upset. Had upset him, too. It had left him feeling restless, unable to settle to anything. He couldn't get Lizzie's distress out of his mind, couldn't think about his plans to steal the wages, though the night he was to do it was almost on him now. He needed more time to compose himself. In the dining room, he sat at the rickety table they'd been allotted, feeling very much alone. He was missing Lizzie's chatter. The tablecloths were clean, but they charged sixpence each for a week's use of the cruet. He'd told everybody here about Lizzie's miscarriage. There were sympathetic smiles for him as they asked after her now. He made a point of telling them he'd be going in to see her tonight. Couldn't have happened at a worse time, they commiserated, but as far as he was concerned, that wasn't true. He told Lizzie he wouldn't go tonight, and now she didn't need to know any more about it. She had an unshakable alibi, and that could improve his. He smiled at Miss Lockwell at the next table, a 60-ish spinster who'd come alone. She told him how delightful she'd found it sitting on the beach during the afternoon. The food wasn't bad, fish, chips, and peas tonight, with rhubarb and custard to follow, bread and butter, cup of tea. He lingered over a second cup of tea until the dining room was empty. Then he cornered Miss Peacock and told her he was on his way to see Lizzie again. The hospital allowed evening visiting on Thursday nights, 7 till 8:30. Lizzie had been given a wooden backrest and was sitting up against it, her ash-blonde hair spread across the pillow. A little colour had come back to her cheeks. "I might be able to come out tomorrow," she was smiling. "Got to see the doctor first. Sister wants to see you before you leave tonight. She'll tell you what time to telephone." "Just as easy to come in and see. I'll put your case in the car." He'd already packed it. He'd half expected this. "Will you bring my red frock?" "All right," he said, pleased he'd even chosen the right one. It brought him some comfort to think that by the time he was fetching her tomorrow, the job would be behind him. "It'll be great to have you out up here. Don't like being on my own, Lizzie." He stood chatting for a few moments with the ward sister, trying to look as though he had nothing else on his mind. He wanted to make sure she'd remember him. "Ring or come by 11 and bring her clothes," she said. As Joey left the hospital, he felt he was on the starting line and itched to be on his way. He'd parked the car round the corner and filled it up with petrol earlier in the day, checked the tires too. He got in. 20 minutes to 8. He reckoned he could be in Birkenhead between 10 and 11. Eli would be down for the night by then. He drove on mile after mile, the Austin 7 chugging along, eating up the road. It was a fine night, with practically no traffic. The stars were bright, and there was hardly any moon. Perfect for what he wanted. A glow shone up from the two instruments on the austere dashboard. Suddenly Joey felt his head roll and the car swing from one side of the road to the other. Alarmed, he pulled himself upright on the steering wheel and braked to a stop. He'd almost fallen asleep. He was lucky there'd been no other traffic about. He hadn't been sleeping well and was desperate for his bed. He would have liked to close his eyes for 30 minutes, but though he could afford to, he had no way of being sure he'd wake up in time. It wouldn't do to sleep until daybreak, and the way he felt at the moment, he could sleep for a week. He got out of the car and walked back a couple of 100 yards. He was wearing his dark polo-necked pullover and black gym shoes. The wind went right through it. Midsummer it might be, but it was cool here. He'd brought a dark jacket. He put it on before he got back behind the wheel. He drove on, feeling more awake. At last he was running through the tunnel to Birkenhead. He had the exact money ready to pay the toll, so he didn't have to speak. He didn't want the toll collector to remember him. He He was drowsy again. There was something soporific about the chug of the engine, and the car hardly rolled at all on the metalled main roads. His mind grew less easy as the time for action drew closer. When he saw the tall black bulk of Evans's factory, he felt strangely reluctant to go inside. Dread was building up into a hard ball in his stomach. He parked the car, not too near, but nearer than when he was going in to work. There wasn't a soul on the streets now. He looked at his watch. It was 11:15. He'd made good time. It wouldn't take long, less than half an hour, and he'd be away again. Joey pulled the bag he'd brought from the back seat and got out, closing the door with a soft click. Every Thursday he'd seen the weekly pay being carried into the office in 2 leather Gladstone bags, and the monthly pay filled another. He'd brought 2 roomy Rexine holdalls and crammed one inside the other. His bags were larger. He reached the side door used by the office staff, put on his wool gloves, and got out his keys and his torch. He'd done this lots of times. He'd gone up to Matthew Mortimer's office, opened the safe, and helped himself to checks. What was so different this time? He tried to tell himself it was almost routine to him now. What was different was that he hadn't been sitting at his desk all day. What was really bothering him was the fear that his earlier thefts had been discovered, and extra watchmen put on duty. Perhaps even the police were keeping watch. When he'd left at 5, knowing all was well, it was less risky to return at 11. And then he mostly had Eli to warn him first. This way he felt less safe. He told himself it was ridiculous to think of going back without the money after driving all this way. He mustn't think of Lizzie. "I feel it in my bones," she'd said. "You'll get caught." He'd been standing in the deep shadow cast by the building for 5 minutes. Nothing had stirred anywhere in the street. He was being foolish. Quickly, he inserted the key, turned it, and let himself into the vestibule. It was black as ink inside, but it always was. It smelled familiar, sickly sweet, as though sugar stayed in the air. He locked the door behind him and crossed to the swing doors leading into the corridor. He'd pushed one half open, when through the panel of wired glass set into it, he saw the powerful beam of a torch coming towards him. His heart missed a beat. He let the door come slowly back against his hand. Eli was doing a security round at this time. The strength had gone from his legs. He felt unable to move. He had his face against the glass as the figure came level. Had he seen the door move? It wasn't Eli. This man was taller and broader. The torch was sweeping along the walls. As it shone over the door, he stepped hurriedly back from the glass. Would his face show white through that? Joey was stiff with fear. Some sixth sense told him the man was going to push the swing doors and come into the vestibule. He stepped back against the wall and at the last moment turned to face it. He felt the door open against his back and tried to flatten himself out against the wall. He saw the torch shine on the outer door. If the man stepped forward to check that the door to the street was locked, he'd be seen. Time was standing still. He no longer dared to breathe. Then the light faded, the door swung back and forward, and finally closed. Joey allowed himself to take a breath of relief. It had been a close thing. He'd been frightened the man would feel the door press against his body. He'd felt he was being squashed. When he'd recovered enough, he quietly pushed the door to take a peep. The man was down the far end of the corridor and heading towards the factory. Perhaps it was an omen and he should get away now. But after coming all this way to get cold feet at this stage, Joey prided himself on being more of a man than that. The Mortimers wouldn't move quickly. They never did. Perhaps it was only that Eli was sick. He thought it could be the watchman who worked at weekends. Eli should have been here. He wasn't on holiday. Or had they got extra men on because of the money in the safe? They never had before, and anyway, he had the place to himself again. Joey took a deep breath, and moving as stealthily as possible, went up the corridor and made for the stairs. Everywhere was in darkness. Everything was perfectly normal, except now his heart was pounding away like a steam engine, and his mouth was as dry as the bottom of a parrot's cage. He reached the hall full of desks. It was almost like coming home to see his own. It seemed a long time since he'd sat there, waiting away the hours. Matthew Mortimer's office was almost as familiar. How many times had he been in here before? Nothing had been moved. He locked himself in as he always did. If that man came back, he might check whether the door was locked. Joey had seen policemen doing it on their beat. They tried every shop door as they patrolled the street. He took off his jacket and laid it on the floor against the door, so no streaks of torchlight might betray his presence from the corridor. He unzipped his bag, took out the one inside, and put both in front of the safe. Joey made himself stop and think. If he heard the key in the lock, he'd just have time to close the safe door, whip up his coat, and hide behind the door. It was the only possible place to hide here. He moved the bags behind the desk, where they couldn't be seen from the door. His fingers were shaking as he opened the safe. It was filled to capacity, just as he'd known it would be. The filled wage packets were standing in a tray, in numbered sequence. He'd seen them like this before, when he collected his own screw. He tipped the tray into one of his bags. It made a phenomenal slithering crash that seemed to echo round the building. He stood listening, but all he heard was his own pounding heart. "Get on with it," he urged himself. There were bundles of notes on another shelf, much the easiest thing for him to handle. He pushed handfuls on top of the wage packets and rammed them down hard. Mostly they were one-pound notes, but there were also several bundles of fivers, great big lovely fivers. There were Hessian bags of silver. He needed his other hold all now, small denominations and large ones. He pushed in as many as he could. There were bags of copper to make up the sum for each employee. It went against the grain to leave anything behind, but they would be too heavy for him to carry. Reluctantly, he closed and locked the safe. Now all he had to do was to get back to his car, and he'd be away. He was pushing his arms into his jacket when he heard footsteps crossing the hall. Heavy boots were crunching towards him. No care was being taken to walk quietly. The anxiety he'd been holding back flared into full-blown panic. He wanted to check that his bags couldn't be seen from the door if it was opened. In the nick of time, he remembered the inch-wide gap under the door was uncovered, and stopped himself from shining his torch. The slightest glimmer of light would be enough to bring the man inside. Joey could feel himself quaking. He stopped breathing as the boots came into the alcove. They didn't stop. He thought the man had patrolled round Miss Peacock's desk and gone out down the hall again. Joey was leaning against the wall, gulping air in relief. He waited until there was silence. This must be the safest moment to leave. When he picked up his bags, the coins jingled in the wage packets. They were heavier than he'd expected. He'd left his key in the lock. Now he turned it gently. The click seemed frighteningly loud. He was sweating. Miss Peacock's alcove was dark and silent. It was safe to go. He moved as quickly and quietly as his bags allowed. He knew every inch of the building like the back of his hand, and could manage very well without any light. He crossed the hall between the rows of desks, passing between that belonging to the lad with acne and his own. He wasn't looking forward to being back at it in another week, but he'd have to come. He'd given his notice right away, say he'd got himself another job in Blackpool. He didn't want the law hounding him, and leaving like that would not be suspicious. He opened the door into the corridor leading to the outside door. He reached the bend where the mailroom had been fitted under the main stairs and stopped dead. A circle of yellow torchlight shone down on heavy boots. Joey was sweating again. He couldn't go that way. The man was standing between him and the exit. He was also standing near the light switch. Any noise, and he could reach up and flood the whole corridor with light. Joey edged back round the corner and set off in the opposite direction. Thank God he knew his way round. He had a master key. He could get out through the factory. The weight was dragging at his arms. He had to fight the impulse to jog, because that increased the jangle from the wage packets. He mustn't make any noise. but he was in the grip of sheer and absolute terror by now. Things were not going as smoothly as he'd planned. Through the communicating door and into the airless fog, redolent of the smell of sugar and toffee. His plimsolls were making a sticking sound as he walked, but he saw nothing and reached the door to the loading bay. The relief of being outside at last was enormous. He was taking great gulps of cool air. It was drying the sweat on his forehead. He crossed the yard. It was easier to see, and nothing had changed since he'd come here regularly. Through the great iron gates to the street. He made himself lock up behind him, instead of streaking away in blind panic. He'd left his car on the other side of the building. He'd have to circle round to it. He set off, keeping to the far side of the street, going faster, not caring if the money did jangle a little now. He wouldn't really feel safe until he was out on the road, a long way from here. He came to the last corner, and saw his Austin 7 lit up by the headlights of a car that had drawn into the curb behind it. Joey felt his knees turn to water as he realized it was a large black police car, and there were two uniformed policemen inside it. He backed off, feeling desperate. This was more than he could stand in one night. Had the night watchman inside the building realized there was an intruder and called the police? He was not too worried about the car. He'd taken the precaution of registering it in a false name, with a false address. It could never be traced to him, but he needed it now. There were icicles in his stomach one moment, and he was sweating the next. He couldn't think what to do for the best. Forget the car and go back by train? He didn't think there was one until morning, and he needed to be at the breakfast table at the Bellevue to complete his alibi. He backed off. It wouldn't do to be caught with these bags in his possession. They were so heavy they were making his arms ache, and he could hardly move with them anyway. He had to hide them, but where? Brick walls rose 8 feet on both sides of the road. It was all industrialization down here. But he had passed a narrow alleyway not far back. It was darker. He went a few yards down it and propped the bags against the wall. They'd be all right there for an hour or so. He felt too tired to think. He was dragging his feet with exhaustion. He wanted to scream with frustration. To get this close to success and then not have the money was more than he could bear. He went back to take another peep at the car. Miraculously, the police car was pulling out from behind it. It drove to the end of the road, heading towards Evans's main entrance. In seconds, he was inside his car, backing up to turn into the street along which he'd come. He leapt out when he drew level with the alley, leaving the engine running. The alley seemed pitch black now, and he had to feel around to retrieve his bags. He heaved them on the back seat and was away again within moments. He wanted to sing with success. He laughed aloud. He'd done it. He turned out onto the main road towards Chester. He couldn't risk going through the tunnel to Liverpool. It was too easy to stop traffic there. This way it was further, and he wasn't sure of the route, but it was safer. This way he couldn't be caught. Fatigue had been banished. He was exhilarated, excited, and on top of the world. There was almost no traffic on the road now. Nothing could stop him. He increased his speed. The car would go up to 50 miles an hour, though there was sideways sway at top speed. He'd finally hit the Mortimers where it would hurt. He'd almost reached New Ferry when he saw the headlights behind him. He couldn't be sure, but it wasn't the police car. It was gaining on him, so he knew it was a more powerful vehicle. Renewed panic made him ram his foot down on the accelerator. He wasn't beaten, because he knew his way round New Ferry. He'd turn down towards the Great Eastern, go round by the New Baths. He could lose this car in the short streets there and come back to the main road quite easily. The turning was coming up right ahead, and the traffic lights were green. He glanced again in his mirror. With luck, they'd turn red before the other car reached them, and he'd gain enough time to get out of sight. Joey swung on the steering wheel to turn into New Ferry Road. He was turning wide of the corner and careering wider still onto the other side of the road. The car wouldn't turn. He bumped up the pavement and headed straight into the plate glass window of the cake shop. The crash was deafening, the jerk painful. His head hit the windscreen. He knew the bags had jerked forward from the seat at the back, and wage packets were hurtling round him. The last thing he was conscious of was the sound of tinkling glass and jangling coins.